Some time ago, I was getting ready to enjoy a few quiet moments with God. I had made the mistake of picking up the newspaper first and finding the sports section. And somehow my eyes got distracted from a Psalm of David to an article in the sports section, and it became my quiet time, I confess to you. Story about a man named Jay Rathman. While hunting deer in the Tehama Wildlife Area near Red Bluff in Northern California, the man climbed to a ledge on the slope of a rocky gorge. And as he raised his head to look over the ledge, he sensed movement to the right of his face. It was a coiled rattler that struck with lightning speed, just missing Rathman's right ear. Well, at that point, I couldn't put the paper down, so I had to read on. The four-foot snake's fangs got snagged in the neck of Rathman's wool turtleneck sweater, and the force of the strike caused the snake to land on his left shoulder. It then coiled around his neck. He grabbed it behind the head with his left hand and could feel the warm venom running down the skin of his neck, the rattles now making a furious racket. He fell backwards, slid headfirst down the steep slope through brush and lava rocks, his rifle and binoculars bouncing beside him. As luck would have it, still reading, he said in describing the incident to a Department of Fish and Game official, "I ended up wedged between some rocks with my feet caught uphill from my head. I could barely move." He got his right hand on his rifle and used it to disengage the fangs from his sweater. But the snake now had enough leverage to strike again. He made about 8 attempts and managed to hit me with his nose just below my eye about 4 times. I kept my face turned so he couldn't get a good angle with his fangs, but it was very close. This chap and I were eyeball to eyeball. And I found that snakes really don't blink. He had fangs like darning needles. I had to choke him to death. It was the only way out. I was afraid with all the blood rushing to my head, I might pass out. When Rathman tried to toss the dead snake aside, he said he couldn't let go of it. I had to pry my fingers from its neck. Rathman, age 45, probably after this incident, age 60, who works for the Defense Department in San Jose, estimates his encounter with the snake lasted about 20 minutes. Warden Dave Smith says of meeting Rathman, "He walked toward me holding this string of rattles and said with a sort of grin on his face, 'I'd like to register a complaint about your wildlife here.'" When I read that again this morning, I thought, how appropriate. We're looking at 4 scenes from David's life. Yesterday we saw David as he was chosen and called by God. Today we're looking at David as he was challenged by a giant. And if you limit today's study in 1 Samuel chapter 17 to a literal giant, you'll miss most of the reason God preserved this battle. Paul writes in Romans 15:4, "Whatever was written in earlier times was written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort from the scriptures might have hope." This battle was preserved not that we might simply learn a historical story, but that we might learn new hope and gain fresh courage for the times in which we live, for the giants like snakes are many, and they come like snakes with frequent force and they don't last just 20 minutes. There are the giants of recurring illness that some of you will live with throughout your years in seminary. Perhaps not you, but your child, your husband or wife, one of your children, one of your parents, perhaps. There are giants that you will face that will come with subpoenas and lawsuits that you have yet to encounter. You will have to contend with professionally competent people who at the same time lack wisdom. That's another giant that is on the horizon just over the ledge of your life. There will be the giants of people who will turn against you once loved by you and loyal to you. It's coming, and it will strike with repeated force, and you'll feel the poison run down your neck. There can be giants of natural disaster, earthquake, volcanic eruptions, rain, drought, loss of home. There can be financial reversals that loom like giants. The report that one of your children is addicted, something that you cannot right now imagine. You will discount it. Or that one of them got a divorce and you didn't even know there was that much trouble. It's a giant. A major disappointment will come, and it will again level you if you handle it in your own strength. Just a few of those previews of coming attractions. They're just around the corner, if not some you are facing today. Well, the Philistines have gathered for battle, the ancient enemy of Israel. And they have gathered at the Valley of Elah, this vast valley that sweeps from one side to another, hills on both sides, and at that time a ravine that passed in the middle, about 20 feet wide, from which David drew the stones to put in the bag from which he would draw the stone that would kill the giant. We're familiar with the story, but I fear the familiarity has bred a little bit of jaded contempt. When you look at the story again through fresh eyes, you see again the horror that was immobilizing the armies of the Israelis under the leadership of weak-willed Saul. Verse 3 tells us the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with the valley between them. Enter Goliath. His dimensions read almost like a football program when you look through the middle section of the program and you read of the height and the weight, and often in a larger program, the background of those who were on the gridiron. By any standard of measure, the champion was an intimidating giant. We read that he came out from the armies of the Philistines, this Goliath giant from Gath, and it begins to tell us about his height and his armor. Allow me. He was over 9 feet tall. Some would say 9'6". Other references, 9'9". About 3 feet taller than the average height of an NBA player today. 3 feet taller. Imagine it. He wore a helmet which only added to the appearance of his height. His coat of mail was fashioned from several hundred small bronze plates that resembled fish scales, meeting the needs of protection, lightness, and freedom of movement. That alone, that coat of mail, weighed between 125 and 175 pounds. Just the coat of mail that he wore. I remember when we had full pack for battle in the Marine Corps, it weighed about 85 pounds. And none of us thought that we could even carry the thing, much less land in water, and go ashore with something that heavy on us. I can't imagine 150 pounds of a coat of mail. But maybe it didn't seem that much if you were 9 feet, 6 inches tall. Like his helmet and coat of mail, the rest of Goliath's armor was also made of bronze. He had greaves that protected him from his knees down to his ankle. And a javelin he used in offensive maneuvers. Goliath's most formidable offensive weapon, verse 7, seems to have been his spear. And the writer tells us that the shaft of the spear was like a weaver's beam. It included a heavy point that was made of iron. By the way, the Philistines seemed to monopolize that particular metal, denying the Israelites troops of iron. Its shaft, like a weaver's beam, had a cord wrapped around it so that the spear could be grasped and hurled a greater distance and with greater stability by virtue of the spin that the wrapping would put on the handle. And on top of that, Goliath's sword, which is not mentioned until 45 and later in 51, it doubtless had an iron blade. He received added protection, as if he needed it, from a large, full-sized, body-sized shield carried by his aide. The Philistine giant must have felt and appeared invincible. On top of those dimensions and those details of his appearance, remember, this man continued to parade from side to side, from day to day, belching out these intimidating words of insult to the other side. He says in verse 8, as he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me." You see, he's down near the ravine looking up on the hillside where the Israelis are bivouacked. And he's saying to them, "Send a man down. Whoever wins, that army wins." Representative kind of battle plan. If I win, we all win. If you win, you get the victory. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, you will serve us. Again, the Philistine screams, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." He's ready to fight. This man has fought throughout his life. He's ready for whoever they might send. By the way, the tallest among the Israelis was the king. And he wasn't about to come out of his tent. He was busy doing what kings do in times of battle. He's shaking at the knees, I would imagine. He is hearing these defying words, and he, because he has never learned throughout his life the truth of 1 Samuel 16:7, which we looked at yesterday, he is focusing on the appearance. He's hearing the words. He's looking at the height of his stature. He's impressed by the armor and this intimidating look that comes from this uncircumcised Philistine. And he has forgotten all about his God. Giants are like that, by the way. It is remarkable how accurate students we can be of the giants. And how forgetful of our God. It's amazing how much we can think upon an enemy and how little at the same time we can think upon our God. So he has never met his match. Well, the scene quickly changes, and we go to those placid hillsides by Bethlehem where our friend David is back with the sheep. And isn't that appropriate? He is a boy of 18, 19. I'm not sure he was even 20 years of age, and he is with his father's sheep, and we are introduced to him again as his dad is advancing in years and the son is there doing some of the chores that he has been doing during his growing up years. Verse 13, three older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to battle. The names of the three sons who went to battle, we met them yesterday, Eliab, Abinadab, and Shammah. David was the youngest. He tended his father's flock at Bethlehem. The writer says it yet again to emphasize the point. The Philistine, back to him, came forth morning and evening for 40 days to take his stand. 40 days! Nothing has happened except this ritual as the giant keeps shouting these insults to the people of the Hebrews. Now Jesse says to his son David one day, take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain, these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of your brothers. Bring along 10 cuts of cheese to the commander and to their thousands, and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. Take these cheeseburgers, get them some encouragement, bring back word to me as to how they're doing, and let me know when you return how things go. And look at verse 20. Is this like David or what? He left the flock with the keeper. He is faithful in the little things like you can't believe. He isn't so anxious to get out in battle that he forgets his responsibilities. You'll come back again and again in the life of David to his attention to such details. He leaves the sheep. He goes to where his father sends him. Verse 22, he leaves his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper, and he runs with these sandwiches up to the battle line, and he doesn't know what's been happening for 40 days. He's been back with the sheep. And when he gets there, he suddenly gets the scene as it unfolds in front of him. We read in verse 24, all the men of Israel, when they saw the Philistine, fled from him and were greatly afraid. And the men of Israel came and said, have you seen the man who is coming up? It's their first greeting. Have you seen that giant? Surely he's coming up to defy Israel. Notice coming up. He's not only down near the ravine, but by now he's coming up closer to their place of a bivouac. He is up nearer where they are camped. Have you seen him? And it will be the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches. So now they're naming the bait. Saul's not going to go, but he's ready to give riches. He's ready to give him his daughter. If that's Michael, that's no great catch, but that's another subject, by the way. And to make his father's house free in Israel. He's going to remove him from any need to pay taxes for the rest of his life. This is a deal, folks. He's going to provide that as sort of a reward if there's anybody in the camp willing to fight. David spoke to the men who were standing by saying, what'll be done for the man who kills the Philistine? He wants to hear about it. And who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? Is that a nice, refreshing change or what? Everybody else knows all about Goliath, but nobody is reminding anybody of God. He says, this thing down here has got everybody intimidated. Why? Remember, this is the man who has been nursed in solitude. He's learned of God while fighting lions and bears. When nobody else is looking. No parade for David. He's been faithful behind the scenes. That's where courage comes. Not at the time of battle. Jeremiah writes that. If you have run with the footmen and they have wearied you, how will you do when the infantry arrives? And if in the time of peace wherein you trusted, what will you do in the jungle of the Jordan? Jeremiah 12:5. David isn't bragging. He's just saying, who gave him the right? Who died and left Goliath in charge? What kind of a deal is this? Now, we're ready for Eliab, verse 28. I told you we'd meet him today, and here he is, playing the role of the older brother. By the way, any of you who are older brothers, you owe your family one thing, an apology, and we'll go on. Eliab, the oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the man, and Eliab's anger was burned against David. Can you believe it? You'd think Eliab would say, "Hot dog, there's somebody here willing to fight." He says, "Oh, little Davy showed up. Little Davy with those four little woolies that you've been watching all this time." Look at Eliab's words. It burned against David. "Why have you come down?" There's an insolence in his tone. "And with whom have you left those few sheep over there near Bethlehem?" Who's keeping your little sheep, Davy? I know your insolence. Ooh, talk about the pot and the kettle. "I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." He's really saying to be seen. "You just come to play this role. I know you." David said, "What have I now done?" I like the old King James reference here. Is there not a cause? Isn't there a reason to fight? You see, David wouldn't get involved in this sibling skirmish. You've got to know when giants come that many things need to be pushed aside so you could address the issue at hand. And you'll be amazed how your brothers and your sisters will come at you, not family brothers and sisters, most likely, but fellow brothers and sisters. Especially when you decide that it's time to take the bull by the horns and get a big job done. It's not always good to listen to too many at that moment. Accountability is one thing. Becoming others' slaves and puppets is another. What have I done? I love it, verse 30. He turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same thing as before. Now when the words which David spoke were heard and someone told Saul, he sent for him. This is a great scene. I love this scene. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." David says that to Saul. "Don't worry, I'm here to step into battle." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're but a youth." While he is emphatic in the Hebrew, while he has been a warrior from his youth, David, or a young man, he doesn't even know his name yet. What do you mean? Here's Saul, tall, looking down at youthful David, and David says to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion and a bear came and took a lamb from the flock." David hadn't told anybody about this. It's some of those lion and bear stories that you don't tell anybody until the moment of the battle. And that's what you draw your strength from. That's why he could say, "The Lord is my light and my counsel. The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I dread? He's the refuge of my life." Saul, I'm not impressed with that Philistine. I've done battle with lions and bears protecting the sheep. After attacking him, I rescued him from his mouth, and when he arose against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Wow, we're talking tough guy. Saul standing there going, "Wow, that is really something, man. Your servant has killed both a lion and a bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine, he just dead meat." Sort of a Swindoll paraphrase. David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from this Philistine." Look at Saul. "Go and the Lord be with you." Don't you hate that? That just tick you off. They always have those kind of words when you're going to go into battle. "God be with you, son." And look at what Saul does. This is another little comical scene. Don't tell me the scriptures don't have a little humor. Saul clothed David with his garments. Now, understand, Saul is a 54 long, David's a 36 regular, okay? And Saul brings this coat of mail, and he puts a helmet. About 9 3/8, David is maybe a 6 7/8, and he's got this helmet looking sideways on his head, and he sticks his sword in his hand. David's walking along. Don't you love the way it reads here? David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested. Isn't that great? Trying to drag along this armor, and he's shaking his head saying, it won't work. Saul, it won't work. By the way, neither will the armor of your faculty work for you when the giants attack in your life. You cannot wear their armor. God's fitted it for their lives, and praise God for it, but now it's time for you to be suited with your armor. And it comes from your own lion and bear stories. Marvelous moment. David says, I don't need this. I'm not used to this. I fight without armor. He's not bragging. He's just used to, you know, the basics. And so he, don't you love it? David took them off right down to his Israeli skivvies. Well, I mean, that's like cutoffs type thing. Verse 40, he took his stick in his hand. Don't you love it? Just a stick. And he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch. Don't get nervous about 5 stones and only 1 giant. There's all kinds of stuff written on it that all kinds of people are nervous about. I mean, if you fight giants, you got to go prepared. You may not hit him the first time. May not hit him the second time. You want to have another stone when you got a clown like this in front of you. And so he's got 5 stones ready. Some have said there were 5 giants. I can't find 5 giants. I've looked all through 1 Samuel. I don't find 5 giants. You got to have more stuff behind the counter than you have on display. And he's got a bag full of stones just in case the first one doesn't meet its mark. And so he gets 5 stones and he moves down toward the Philistines. This is a great moment. Time's up. No, I can't quit yet. The Philistine says to David, am I a dog? That you come to me with sticks? What is this? Philistine cursed David by his gods. That's all David needed. That's like saying sic'em to a bulldog. He cursed him. And he said to David, you come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. Can you hear the... It's a great moment. He's starting that thing. If you've ever seen guys that could use slings in the Middle East, man, they'll hit you right between the running lights. I mean, they swing that thing around until it's a blur. And David's saying, you come after me, I'm coming after you in the name of the Lord of hosts. Where am I? Verse 48, then it happened. Isn't this great the way the writer puts it? Then it happened. When the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, and David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine, David put his hand in his bag, took from it a stone, and slung it. It struck the Philistine on his forehead. It was a great moment. He didn't need the other 4 stones. David probably went, wow, it's great, the giant just fall back. And then the great scene that follows. David, verse 50, David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was not a sword in David's hand. Of course not. He's not a swordsman. He's a stone slinger. That's what makes David unique. That's why you love him. It's great big giant being dropped by a little stone. Guys, you gals, listen to me. You're getting bags full of stones here. Don't waste one of them. You're going to need every one of them. You don't need big, shiny swords. You just need your own homemade sling and your stone. And you need to know how to sling that stone. It's what you're learning. But runs toward the Philistine and took his sword, and the Philistine sword pulls it out of the sheath, and he cuts off his head. It's a great moment. Got that thing hanging there with all that stuff hanging out underneath it. I love this thing. His stuff hanging out all over him. Got him right there in his hands. Looks at this stuff, slings it around a little. My daddy wanted a token from the battle. I got a token for him, boy. So he takes the head of the giant. Watch what happens. He took the head of the giant and he drags it back. Verse 54, brings it to Jerusalem, but he puts the weapons in his tent. Ah, is that great? It's his trophy case. There's a wolf's leg. There's a bear's skull. There's a bear rug. There's a lion's paw. And there's Goliath's armor. Oh, wow. Why? Because you need to be reminded of great victories. Don't get rid of the victories. Cynthia and I fall back on them all the time. Remember when he did this for us in 1973? Remember when he met our need in 1978? Remember when we didn't know where to turn in 1980? We couldn't sell that big old church building. It's a white elephant. And God had a way of coming in the last minute, the last hour, and he did it. We haul that armor home, put it up in our room. Another reminder. Our walls are full of those reminders. And that's the way it is when you fight like a David. You don't need all the stuff. You just need the skill of a person who has been trained alone with God. Father, I thank you today for the very blessed truth of a simple story lived in light of today's giants. Forgive us, our Father, for remembering the wrong things and forgetting those things that should be part of our trophy case marked by the grace of God. Touch our lives and change our hearts and turn our minds toward you, living God, as we live our life in the midst of the snakes.